Snapped Mafia.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Snap. As usual, I'm your host, Pete.
And I'm Paul.
And this is your weekly dissection of music's greatest hits, hidden gems, and cultural resets. Each week, we dive deep into a different album to try and convince you that they truly snapped. And this week, we are doing Can't Be Tamed by Miley Cyrus. This is Miley's third studio album, released on June 18th, 2010 by Hollywood Records, and was her final album with them as a label. Cyrus herself described this album as a good record to blast in your car.
And blast it we did. This album is full of lyrical themes talking about breaking free of constraints and expectations, which are largely mentioned in the context of romantic relationships, though we will find out by digging a bit deeper that maybe this is a pointed commentary on her actual music career. The entire album was produced by Rock Mafia and John Shanks, evenly split down the middle, with Rock Mafia producing the first six songs and Shanks producing the latter half. Cyrus co-wrote 11 of the 12 tracks, with the only exception being Every Rose Has Its Thorn, which was a cover.
Okay, so obviously nowadays Miley is a big pop star, big celebrity name, but like, what was she up to at this point in her career?
So coming into this era, Miley already had a catalogue of scandals in the media in the previous few years, from dancing on an ice cream cart holding onto a pole on the Teen Choice Awards, singing Party in the USA, to posing topless covered by a sheet with her father Billy Ray. All roads were pointing to Miley shedding her Hannah Montana wig and going darker. I don't know if you've ever seen the performance, Pete, where she's holding on to the ice cream pole, but it is genuinely the most tame she could be tamed performance that I've seen. And the scandal all over the media was that she was a pole dancer, she was a slut, she was no longer an appropriate role model for little girls, which I don't even think Miley ever really wanted to be.
Quite the scandal, actually.
For me then, the flip in this era was her leaning so far into being the bad girl and just moving away from her Disney persona, quite similarly to Ashley had done a few episodes ago in Guilty Pleasure. I think a good way to sum it up is to just say that Hannah Montana may have died in the bangers era, but she was mortally wounded when Can't Be Tamed came out.
Finish her.
Finish her. Not fatality.
And didn't she describe this as her last pop record?
Yeah, she gives a few interviews in the era saying she wants to take a bit of a hiatus after it comes out. Now, this is before the album even drops, showing an indication that she wanted to kind of rush this album out and then move away, because as you've sort of alluded to, this was her last album with Hollywood Records, the Disney subset. A few months later, she even goes on to elaborate, saying that she wasn't really feeling the music on Can't Be Tamed, saying, "The more I make music that doesn't truly inspire me, the more I feel like I'm blending in with everybody else."
That's so shocking to me, because you would presume that this is really her finally being truthful with the music she wants to do. But I guess while she was still under contract, she had to make the kind of music that she was being told to do for the last record. And as you've said before, this is very reminiscent of our grunge queen, Ashley Tisdale's Guilty Pleasure era, Demi's rock era, and even a prelude to the Reputation eras that were to come.
And definitely from the sounds of it, it feels like Miley wasn't the biggest fan of the music that she put out in this era. What was the consensus of the general public or the professionals when they were talking about this album?
Well, as a shock to me, they hated it too. I really would have thought this would have performed better because Can't Be Tamed as a single was so massive, but the album itself gets a score of 48 on Metacritic, which is out of 100 from professional outlets, and 7.4 from the general public, showing that it resonated more with the masses rather than actual critics of the music. It is actually her lowest critical score, below Younger Now and even her Dead Pets era, which didn't pierce the public zeitgeist anywhere near as much and had half of a push that Can't Be Tamed had.
Personally, I find that also extremely surprising. I don't really understand why this album in particular has such low critical scores. The only reason I can kind of justify it is by saying it seems as though the Yummy Mummies and the older generation were pushing the general consensus that Miley was just being a slut and not being a very good role model, and also just that it was sort of a voiceless album and doesn't have a really unique perspective, which I completely disagree with overall. I feel like the overall messaging of it being Can't Be Tamed, and even that being the album title, is a good summary and reflection of what the era is about, what the album is about, and what the songs underneath that is all about as well.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good point. And even the album cover being her in the classic way of showing that someone's in their rock, I don't give a fuck era, is to wear a leather jacket.
Yeah, she's kind of lifted the grunge font that Ashley Tisdale had on Guilty Pleasure 2 and slapped it on there with a little, like, broken chunks out of the typeface. It just screams messy MySpace girl. And I feel like while the overall the album cover is very simplistic, it does give off that overall message of just rebellion.
And Miley actually bumped into Ashley in Superdrug getting the hair dye just to make sure she could have peak I'm in my rockin' out era.
I mean, I have to imagine they were in deep consultation about this. They came out in very close succession. Ashley's coming out in 2009, and then basically exactly a year later, Miley drops Can't Be Tamed. So there's definitely some overlap and some collab. I would have loved for Ashley to have been a collaborator on this album. A duet between the two would be amazing.
I mean, there's a lot of similarities. There must be something in the water, because Ashley also had a Black Angel Wings era in Crank It Up.
There definitely was a 2-for-1 sale in your local Party City for those Black Angel Wings for sure in the early 2010s.
Speaking of wings, we're actually going to go to our very first ad break.
This is a bird. An Avis Cyrus, actually. She eats every time she goes into the recording booth and survives off the attention of the paparazzi. She is the last of her kind in the entire ecosystem, and she is going extinct as a result of a lack of streams. Please, we beg of you, take 44 minutes of your day and listen to Can't Be Tamed in full before it's too late, and tweet hashtag stream it or lose it to @snappedpod today. We thank you.
Right, enough squawking. Let's get into these singles. So the first single is the titular track, Can't Be Tamed, which is released on May 18th, 2010. And what a cultural impact this had. The track actually only debuted at number 8, though, on the US Billboard Hot 100. Number 5 in Ireland, though, Miley, you're welcome. According to Cyrus, Can't Be Tamed describes a desire to break out and experience freedom. The song's lyrics deal with the themes of freedom and self-expression, obviously. And actually, in a recent interview on Jimmy Fallon's The Tonight Show, Miley shared that Can't Be Tamed is her favourite song from her older albums. But I don't think she thinks much of the album as a whole.
Initially, when I saw it, I was really surprised that it only went number 8 on the Hot 100, because I feel like it's such a big song. I feel like a lot of people know this song. And at the time, it felt as though it was everywhere.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you couldn't go into any shop, or you couldn't turn on the radio and it wasn't playing, and everyone was discussing how Miley was giving a fuck you to the little girls who watched and cared about her as Hannah Montana.
And I think she was as well. I think that was part of the marketing strategy, which is quite counterintuitive given that she was still on Disney's label. I would love to have been in some of those conversations at the boardrooms when they were chatting about this rollout and what Miley was trying to do. I think we'll get into it more, but I'm surprised she was allowed to do half of what she was on some of the lyrics and some of the live performances as well. But maybe starting with the music video is the best way to go, because it is one of the first things that comes to mind when I'm thinking about this song.
Genuinely, if you went on Mumsnet, you would think that this video included her having sex, shooting up drugs, kicking a dog in the face. Media around this release was as if she was public enemy number one.
Which is why I don't get why it didn't do even better, because there was so much free publicity given to it in that regard. But when you actually step back and watch the music video, which starts with Miley being unveiled in a museum exhibit as an Avis Cyrus, this weird hybrid between a bird and a human. I don't really know. There's better CGI in that than there was in a lot of Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. But
definitely in the board meeting, they said, oh, you as a bird in a cage. And then they closed the book and went to film it, because that's the only message in the whole music video.
I really like the concept of it being her stuck in a cage, everyone's coming to view her, not really caring about her actual life, you know, without getting too much into our own beliefs. But even things like zoos are not very ethical at all for animals, let alone for humans, to be stuck behind a cage and not really cared about in terms of their actual emotions or how they're supposed to actually live their life. I think this is a very piece of me inspired in terms of the paparazzi and the media swirling around and just trying to get the best shot. And I also think that by playing an extinct creature also feeds into how dangerous it is for this media scrutiny to continue. Again, calling back to Princess Diana as well, a lot of negative things that the media can do whenever they are all eyes on you. So that message I really enjoy, but then there's also just 3.5 minutes of her dancing around in the cage with nothing else to it and like racking up the museum like they're in Night of the Living Museum. It feels more like an advert for that movie than it does for the album a lot of times.
Night at the Museum.
What did I say?
Night of the Living Museum.
I can't go back. I don't know what I was saying. But it sometimes feels more like an advertisement for Night of the... Night at?
Yeah.
Why don't I know what this movie is called? I don't care about Ben Stiller. Night of the Living Museum.
Oh, don't joke about that.
Oh, sorry. Very serious. I'm embarrassed. And a lot of the times it feels more like an advertisement for Night at the Living Museum versus... I said at.
You said at the Living Museum again.
Is it not called Night at the Living Museum?
No, Night at the Museum.
I'm writing this down.
Night at the Museum.
Night of the Museum is the second single, apparently.
Night at the Museum.
At Night of the Museum. Are you sure for sure?
No, not ah.
You just said ah.
No, I said Night at the Museum.
What did I say? Night at a Museum?
You said Night at the Living Museum.
No, I know I said living. It was living. It's called Night at a Museum. That's new to me. Night
at the Museum.
Okay, that's not that difficult. Okay.
I might keep this.
It's funny. It's funny. Night at. Why does it say Night of the Museum there? I know Piggy wrote that. A Night at the Museum.
No, Night.
Ben Stiller, I don't think of you. Sorry, almost and rotted. You ever played Sacagawea, though? I can keep her. Okay. Take 60, okay. I'm gonna cry. I can't even say it with a straight face. Shh, I'm not looking at you. And at times it feels more like a... Oh, God. And it... Oh, good luck editing this, Pete. And half the time it feels more like an advertisement for the film Night at the Museum more than an advertisement for this actual album.
It's also an interesting choice that the crowd around the cage are all the rich and the famous and the people who are pulling the strings in terms of the money. I think as a child, she must have been in a lot of boardrooms with people telling her to perform and how much money she was going to make for her family. And when she gets out of the cage, she is dancing with the people who are similar to her. I think she wants to be with her crowd, her chosen family, rather than with the rich and famous.
Right. It's super important to emphasize that Miley's only 17 when this album comes out. She's so young and she just wants to live her life and find herself. I think we can all look back to when we were 17, 18, especially as queer people, and realizing that we just want to find ourselves and not be put into a particular box, especially going through puberty in the public eye and trying to go have fun. This was the time when Miley was smoking from a bong and everyone was saying she was a drug addict. The media at this time were so ruthless and like to pull everything to an extreme and label you as something versus just reporting on the actual truth. And that's so toxic. Those elements of the music video I like does grow a little bit stale by the end, but in conjunction with the song, a really strong outlook at maturing, becoming an adult, and not really caring about what anyone thinks.
And what about the second single?
It takes a really long time for single number 2 to come out. It doesn't come out for another 4 months after the album drops, where she releases Who Owns My Heart on October 22nd of 2010. Similar to Guilty Pleasure once again, a lot of the fans in Germany must have been clamoring for this song because, first of all, no one in America purchased this song. It doesn't even chart over there, but it does really well in some really random European countries. For example, it gets number 15 in Russian Europlay chart, as well as number 24 in the Germany charts, and even going as high as number 2 in the Belgium charts, which, I mean, the people in Belgium just couldn't get enough of the song, apparently.
Not the ultra tip Flanders charts.
I didn't want to make some joke about The Simpsons there, but I don't even know. Well, Miley looked better in Nothing At All as well, to be fair, in this music video, because she was in clad dressed, grungy in the club, dancing up on a girl and a guy, giving bisexual, pansexual rights. And it's clear that Miley's really intentionally being provocative to finish off this era with Disney, not just this album. The music video is very TikTok, Kesha inspired. I feel like a lot of the music videos in this era are just people partying and having a good time. And overall, it's just about having fun. The song itself, though, before we get to the music video, what do you feel about it?
I was actually shocked that this was a single because I have obviously heard it, but I wouldn't think of it as one that they would try to push from the album.
Right, it's supposed to be about going out, having a good night, and then being unsure whether you've actually fallen in love with somebody. Or is the music just so good, the brain chemical is just flowing, the alcohol is taking its effect, and you're not really sure if you actually fancy the person or you're just intoxicated. Which I understand, but then the lyric, "Who owns my heart, is it love or is it art?" makes it a bit confusing for me then, because in my own brain, I'm thinking, would she rather find a person to be in a relationship with, or would she rather focus on her career and how that would lead her? So then when I watch the music video and I see that it's just a generic dance song, it almost feels a bit underwhelming with the lyrics that are almost a bit too artsy-fartsy then at that point.
For me, I would read that more as the concept of having to monetize the things that you're passionate about. I feel that with this era in general is that she obviously enjoys singing and writing, but she doesn't enjoy this era.
Right, I get what you mean. It's like almost, would she rather push out an album just to be finished her deal, even if she doesn't love the work? Or should the focus be doing her most authentic personal album and the dichotomy between that? Really interestingly as well, it doesn't actually have the second most streams on Spotify despite being a single. It's clocked in around 33 million streams, which is still really good. But Stay, a more ballad-esque song, has 47.5 million, and I can't quite work out why it's got so many. It's, again, really a good song. Not a complete standout for me personally. It would fall in the middle of the pack. And I was trying to work out, was it a TikTok sound? Was there a specific reason why it's getting a lot of traction? I don't really know.
If any listeners know, please send answers in on a postcard.
Not a message in a bottle. And what I would also like the listeners to let us know is why she decided to team up with both Vodafone and Orange UK mobile providers to release exclusive instrumentals of Who Owns My Heart. I don't know who asked for this, who signed this off. I didn't have an Orange UK mobile or a Vodafone, so I missed out on this. But they were very generous and uploaded them to Spotify and have less than 10,000 streams combined. If you ever want to go to karaoke and do a cover of the Vodafone instrumental exclusive, I'll meet you there.
Are they different?
I didn't get far enough in to determine, and neither did the less than 10,000 people who streamed it.
Well, with most of our pop girls, we know that the best songs aren't necessarily the ones with the most streams. So I think we should delve deeper into the track list and play some Snapped or Flopped.
That's right. And let's start with some Flopped. And first for me definitely has to be Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Now, as I alluded to earlier, this is actually a cover of American glam metal band Poison song from 1988. Miley actually has a history of performing covers, including Breakout's Girls Just Wanna Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper, Blondie's Heart of Glass, and Zombie by the Cranberries, which are all absolutely brilliant covers that I feel like Miley truly transforms into her own styling. But to me, Every Rose Has Its Thorn sounds more like a karaoke cover rather than a reimagining. On the original, actually, there are guitar solos that bring more emotion and bite to the song that I feel like would fit so well on Can't Be Tame, but they're completely absent in Miley's cover. And it's hard for me not to think that perhaps given her full discography, it would suit more on Plastic Heart than it would be on Can't Be Tamed.
It definitely seems like it inspires where her sound goes later. She clearly picked the song because it means something to her. And I think she said it's because like songs these days don't have as much of an emotional punch as they did in the 80s. But to me, this sounds like a campfire song or something. It's very...
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. The final chorus needed a boost. It needed some production to be ramped up somewhere. Someone needed to flip a switch and just go off because her vocals don't really go anywhere and she can belt. So I don't know why she didn't. Realizing now that she wrote every other song off this album except for this one makes it even more clear because she's not putting her full emotion. She's not putting her whole moussey into it either. Not her cyrusy. That sounds like an infection, actually.
Please.
Filth!
Well, I also wish she hadn't written Forgiveness and Love, ironically. I don't forgive her or love her for this song. It's giving me Christian Sunday school realness, to be honest. The critics didn't love this one either. Some were saying that the lyrics were among the more over-the-top cutesy moments, specifically commenting that the lines were so unbelievably saccharine that Hallmark would ultimately have to turn them down.
Oh, that's a raid.
The song itself discusses differences between people being in a deep, connected, happy, romantic relationship, living in the moment, and accepting each other's flaws and feelings for each other. and also uses brief and potent undercurrent double entendres to vocalize that life imitates art. But for me, it's a skip. It's repetitive, it's juvenile, which is literally the opposite of why she's doing this album, to show that she's an adult, and it is criminally forgettable.
What do I think about her? I don't think of her. Now that they're out of the way, let's get into some of the snaps on this album, because we do have a few to go through. The first being Robot, which for me is the best song off this album.
Yes.
Okay, so initially I just want to shout out the lyrics, because I think her saying, stand here, sell this and hit your mark, I would scream but I'm just this hollow shell, is a summation of everything she's trying to say in this album. This is the anthem of the album for me, which is very similar in tone and messaging to Can't Be Tamed, being all about being rebellious and breaking out from societal slash music industry expectations at the core of its messaging. In contrast, though, to Can't Be Tamed, it appears to be calling out Disney and Hollywood Records more explicitly, with lyrics such as stop telling me I'm not in a big machine, seeming to put the record label on blast for clearly having such a big hand in her career and the direction of which it was going. This is only fueled further by Disney coming out after performances such as the aforementioned Party in the USA at the Teen Choice Awards, noting, quote, Disney Channel won't be commenting on that performance. Although parents can rest assured that all content presented on the Disney Channel is age appropriate for our audience. That feels like a really clear fuck you to Miley from the record label for me. And I think this is her saying, well, fuck you too. It's very clear that Miley didn't feel enough support from her label to make her own creative decisions, and potentially rushing out Can't Be Tamed 1 year after her previous EP, Time of Our Lives, and 2 years after Breakout, show a desire to finish off her 3-album deal with Hollywood Records and get out as soon as possible.
Definitely. I'm actually really surprised that the label even allowed her to release the song at all, as it is so cutting, but I guess they just knew that it was such a bop that it couldn't be held in the vault.
Personally, I prefer it sonically to Can't Be Tamed, but I also can't imagine the era without that as the first single. Though a weird alternate reality with Robot being the third single could have been amazing, with the music video being the advert for Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian.
Not her Aliens in the Attic era.
Aliens are in the attic. There are knights at the museum.
Speaking of things that are critically acclaimed, let's talk about one of the best songs on the album, and that is Liberty Walk.
Period.
I've actually confessed that this is going to be my drag debut number, will be to Liberty Walk. And I won't spoil what I have planned for this number, but it will leave you gagged. We'll say that.
I'm not gagging. I mean, I'm gagging it from, like, the smell.
Liberty Walk describes an individual who's leaving a harmful relationship, which Miley felt leaned towards more meaningful lyrical content instead of super shallow current mainstream music. And she spilled. But she does give weird soundbites about this song, including a weird interview moment where she says, I wrote it for women that feel like they're stuck in an abusive relationship, but it's also a dance song.
I mean, oh my god. I didn't even know. I didn't read it.
I'm like, oh? In November of 2011, Miley released a video which featured a remix version of Liberty Walk by Rock Mafia. It featured news footage of the Occupy movement that was spreading from Wall Street and began with a message saying, this is dedicated to the thousands of people who are standing up for what they believe in, showing scenes of sign-waving protesters and pepper-spraying police. This, to me, fits more with Miley's own personal brand now of being very political and being very fuck the police, legalize marijuana type of activism.
100%, yeah, I do feel like, especially because this was after her record deal had ended with Hollywood Records as well, this does more feel like a tease into the bangers era that we're gonna see in a few years from her.
Of course, as with most of this record, reviewers did not like the lyrics, and most of them criticized the rap verses, saying the overall song was dull, and Liberty Walk would make Glee's Mr. Shu blush. With one person calling it a loopy Jason Derulo ripoff.
Jason Derulo wishes he had a bop like Liberty Walk.
I know, how rude. It's such a good song, but despite not being released as a single now, Liberty Walk peaked at number 3 on the US Billboard, bubbling under Hot 100 singles. 103 is not bad for an album track.
Amazing, to be honest.
But anyway, right, Paula, who else is going to be in the bubbling under Hot 100?
Well, if Liberty Walk was number 3, I think Permanent December is going to be number 20. But I really like it. Permanent December is all about Melly traveling around the world on tour, receiving admiration from men or women. And if, no, she's actually quite firm. It's men. she said, no girls allowed. Oh. But realizing that she only wants to come home to her lover at the end of the night. And it's quite a cute lovey song in an album that otherwise has love songs relating to heartbreak or breakups, which makes it stand out for me as a person who loves a love song. It's also notably Kesha-inspired sans the Dr. Luke production, thankfully, and there is a heavy use of auto-tune on the song. And I actually remember hearing it for the very first time and squealing once that chorus hits with the heavy production. Pete knows very well, actually, that I'm a gay that loves some good vocoder. Because it just makes the song such an earworm. It just gets right lodged in there. Like everything else on the album though, it was panned by a lot of critics and fans as part of their review, which was scathing, stating that it sounds unfinished and the vocal enhancement was unnecessary.
Boo.
Boo. Okay, Karen, enjoy your stale bread for breakfast. I totally understand all of that. She's not trying to make a grand political message or anything that would require that level of auto-tune, but it sounds so awesome. And there's like a breakdown at the very end of the song where the backing track just cuts and it sounds like she's falling and there's the vocoder effect. Oh, chef's kiss. It's so good. And she snapped for that alone for me.
100%. Such a good song.
And this song has the remarkable feat of being the only song that Miley has never performed live from the album, showing that maybe she doesn't think it's that good either. But I will pick it and I will make her sing this live someday. I'm tempted to like see if she's on Cameo and then I could get her to sing a bar for it for me. Or I could get Countess Leanne to sing a version of it and pretend like it's Miley. Unsure. She's only 100 pounds. Yeah. Oh. Countess Leanne featuring Miley Cyrus.
You are so busted, Luann.
And for only £3, you can listen to this pod without adverts. But because you did not, here are some sponsored advertisements.
Entering your edgy rebellion era? Need to kick those annoying little Disney girls in the tits? Screw forgiveness and love. Dark Destiny eyeliner. Show those kids that you're a rose made of thorn, and your heart only beats for cold, hard cash.
No little Disney girls were hurt in the making of that advertisement, but some will have their feelings hurt in this week's edition of the Snappy Awards. For the first award, we're going to head right over to Pete on the grind with the cringiest line.
Thanks, Paul. Now, I love finding a cringy line. And for me, this was probably the hardest one so far because everything is in the same tone. As we've just shown, I love Permanent December, but some of the rhyme schemes are a bit weird for me. There's a lot of listing of cities and places around the world. And for me, the weirdest slash cringiest line is when she says, I've been to New York, been to LA, and to Baton Rouge, but she says it like Baton Rouge.
She's putting her like Miley Stewart impression on that little country bumpkin. It's a bit cringy. She's trying to show that whenever you travel the world, you can speak in any accent you want. And Doree Kemsley would be very proud.
When you've traveled the world, you can speak in any accent you want.
Our next award is for Weirdest Fact.
I did trawl the internet for this one, and for me, the weirdest thing about this entire album and its rollout was just how badly it sold. When it came out in America, it only sold 102,000 copies in the very first week, whereas Breakout, her second studio album, debuted at number one with sales of 371,000 copopies. And as of January 2014, well, they probably just stopped counting because they're like, no one's buying this. Can't Be Tamed had only moved 350,000 copies in the United States. 21,000 copies less than Breakout sold in the first week altogether. I mean, it was a commercial bombing.
That's insane when you think about those numbers.
Right, like it took her 4 years to sell what she sold in 1 week on a more prepubescent, simplistic album. I just find that so shocking and so weird, and I don't understand why. Personally, I think she wouldn't have got picked up again by Hollywood Records with those numbers. So I think it was fortunate for her and for them that she decided to part ways and move on to something else. Moving on to other things that didn't sell very well, let's talk about her ugliest merch. What have you got for us, Pete?
Well, sadly, this album did not have an official tour specifically just for Can't Be Tamed. Miley gives a lot of interviews saying that she doesn't want to tour in America and she wants to go only to places where she's going to get love, like Australia and South America. Even going so far as to say, I don't want to go anywhere where I don't feel completely comfortable. So she does eventually in 2011 go on a tour called the Gypsy Heart Tour, which is where we find our beautiful merch. And the few images I could find, and of course we'll post some, they're very much Vampire Diaries inspired. There's like a little poster with her covered in crows, which is giving me very Pretty Little Liars or something in that photo.
Yeah.
I don't understand why there isn't a t-shirt with her with the black wings. I don't understand. That would be so easy. Or even just her from the cover of the CD.
She's completely just dropped all ties with Can't Be Tamed at this point altogether, it feels like. Maybe she doesn't have access to those images because they're with the previous record label or something, but the stuff she does produce looks extremely budget. Like, extremely low budget.
Is there no budget this time around?
I don't know which one you would pick of these four t-shirts that I found. I think I would probably pick the one where she's covered in rose petals, I think, with really red lips on the left.
For me, this bottom one where she's just in a blood splatter. I don't even know if she's in that picture because they've like set like one of the little things on top of it. I don't know.
I think it's just a blood splatter that says Miley Cyrus.
Though the campness of it, if it had been a red blood splatter and said Hannah Montana, I would have purchased that.
I would have purchased.
And you know these are all like $35 to $40 minimum as well. And they're on Fruit of the Loom t-shirts. They just look extremely cheap.
Yeah, they're peeling off after one wash for sure. Our next award is for Best Live Performance, Paul.
For me, this is pretty easy because she just performs Can't Be Tamed in 10 different venues and calls it a day for this album rollout. But they're all extremely strong performances, especially the performance that she gives on Britain's Got Talent. I remember watching it live and being gooped at A, her vocals, and B, her pretending to kiss a girl. I just know this Simon Cowell was gagged. He's like, not on my stage, honey. But again, for me, it's kind of like a two-folded piece around my vocals are incredible and I'm also not a 15-year-old girl anymore. I'm able to make my own decisions.
Remember the days when me and Pop Girl debuts would happen on Britain's Got Talent?
Right, and now it's like Susan Boyle turning out another cover and like a dog running about. Like they don't even have... No, but genuinely, they don't even have musical performances anymore that I can remember. They usually have Amanda Holden at gunpoint walking towards the stage to sing an opera ballad no one asked for. It's just not at the same level anymore. And finally, over to the red carpet, Pete, tell us what is the best look from this era.
I would be remiss to pick anything other than the Ava Cyrus. I actually really like in the music video, she juxtaposes this black bird against this almost peacock look where she's lying on her back and you can see the peacock feathers behind her. But the black wings, the black smudged eyeliner, the crazy hair, it's very reminiscent of a certain Uncut Jam of the moment. I could see Julia Fox wearing this to go to Kmart tomorrow.
But I actually was going to say, do you think Ava Cyrus would be good in the Fenty 2023 show? Because I do feel like she could stomp down that runway.
Do you think she's supposed to be like an evil Victoria's Angel as well?
I think so. I think Victoria's Secret was at its peak in this era, and I think it symbolized a good, wholesome, sexy girl, and the black angel wings really was a rebellious way of doing that. It was a pretty simplistic imagery. Also the fallen angel imagery again, or like shedding the Disney image, is very clear in that as well, and it's very effective. We love it, clearly. Well, that's everything that we have for you at this week's Snappies. We're gonna head right back to the studio to wrap up our final thoughts on Can't Be Tamed.
When wrapping up our thoughts on this album, I think it's important to look at her career trajectory at this point. We're looking at, after this album rollout and the Gypsy Heart tour, a 3-year break in her career where we didn't hear from her at all before coming back with We Can't Stop and leaning even further into her sexual image, twerking, drugs, not giving a fuck, short hair, dead pets, before, unfortunately, as everyone ends up doing, going into her Joanne era with Younger Now in 2017. As you mentioned, a lot of her inspirations come from female rock. And finally, I think she found her niche in 2020 with Plastic Hearts, giving us her best album in a decade.
Completely agree. I feel like it might initially appear that Can't Be Tamed inspired bangers most with its themes of rebellion and freedom and stuff like that, I'd actually wager that this album had the biggest impact on Plastic Hearts because it was her first dip into rock and grunge sonically, even within a pop package. And I think Plastic Hearts also deals a lot with freedom and gaining closure, but from her marriage with Liam Hemsworth rather than a record label or from the media.
Why does everyone produce their best work when they're at their lowest?
We love women who get broken up with because they come back stronger than ever, looking better than ever, finding somebody hotter than ever, and producing bops that we can then listen to and aspire to live up to.
So overall, what would you say is the verdict on this album? Do you think it is a success or a flop? Because it does have a very strong first single rollout and very clear, focused era around it. But as we've seen, every song is slated and every chart position is crunch.
Definitely. I'm still really surprised when I started to look up the specific reviews this album had, how slated it was by critics and the general public alike. It's very difficult to find anyone other than the niche little Miley fans that enjoy this album to the same level that I do. So difficult to wrap my head around whether I think it's a success or flop overall, taking myself out of it. I think it's hard to ignore the fact that Miley seems to think it was a flop overall for her career. She doesn't really delve into it very much and doesn't speak about it very highly as well. But I also think without it, her career would not have ended up where it did. It definitely feels like the biggest transitionary point into her becoming who she wanted to be in the end.
I think it's really important for her to take that 3-year gap so she doesn't feel like she has to be on a conveyor belt churning out more of the same pop that she's clearly bored of doing. That's why Banger sounds so different, because she doesn't care.
Right, and I think songs like Robot are a tease to the audience that she's not happy. It's almost like she's crying from inside the house, trying to get out rather than anything else. She's really trying to get free and trying to tell us that. And moving on to something like Bangers, that is a complete left turn, is only a further obvious signifier of that. I guess just to actually answer your question, I would lean on it being a success because of what it does for her career and for where it leads her. But in isolation, perhaps, is a flop. Which is kind of a cop-out answer, I know, but is the best I can give.
As I said before, regarding the lack of tour, plus the fact we get two singles at completely different points in the year, which don't really convey the same message, the entire era for me feels a bit unfinished. When you compare it to Plastic Hearts, for example, which we're still living in now, Miley is giving an amazing Latin America tour and live album, which makes the whole era feel like it's continually going until her next album comes out.
Completely. And even on that point around the current tour she's doing called Attention Live, there are no songs from Can't Be Tamed on the 2022 live album, not even Can't Be Tamed as a single. She pulls from essentially every other album except for Younger Now as well, which makes it feel like she just doesn't consider these as her main eras, which for me is really unfortunate because the music behind it is so strong, and I just wish that she and the general public got behind it a bit more to make it what it could have been. But I'm so glad that finally in 2022 she's doing what I believe to be Can't Be Tamed Miley's version.
Thank you so much to all of our listeners for tuning in for this episode of Snapped. Follow along on our socials at SnapPod for some exclusive content, and make sure to tune in next week for some more pop goodness. I've been your host Pete,
and I've been Paul.
See you next week.
Bye everyone.
Bye
bye.